This is the Mother Jones Podcast. I'm Jamila King in Brooklyn. On today's show, things are happening so quickly. A couple weeks ago, we brought you the inside story of the Biden administration's plans to tackle climate change. Now, we're going to talk about another big campaign promise: immigration reform, the border wall, ICE detention camps, family separation, the horror of watching Trump destroy the immigration system and make life miserable for millions of immigrants. What did Trump do, and how can it be undone? Two immigration reporters on the show this week talking about the damage that Trump did and what Biden's done so far to undo it. Coming up, stay tuned. I'm here with Fernanda Chavri and Noah Lennard on the phone. They're two Mother Jones reporters covering immigration. How's it going, you two?
Hi.
It's going all right. How are you, Jamila?
I'm hanging in there. Okay, guys. So we're coming out of 4 years of a Donald Trump presidency, and his big signature item was his war on immigrants. What exactly did he do to upend the status quo?
Well, I would say from the start, before Trump even entered the White House, his intentions were really clear.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best.
He came after immigrants.
They're sending people that have lots of problems.
And he called Mexicans who came across the border rapists and the worst of the worst, essentially.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
Right after taking office, he almost immediately wrote the Muslim ban, what became known as the Muslim ban.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Then in 2017, a little later, he goes after DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals for Dreamers.
The program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
You know, we have dreamers too. We have dreamers in this country too. We can't forget our dreamers. I have a lot of dreamers here.
In 2018, things start to get particularly bad at the border.
They are desperate to get across. The Trump administration desperate to stop them. This, the U.S.-Mexico border.
He implements what we now know was a policy called zero tolerance policy, but really it was family separation. He starts separating parents from their children at the border.
We have our first unfiltered look this morning inside a facility for separated immigrant children.
Papa. Papa.
Then Trump essentially says to anyone else that the border is full.
Our country is full. Our area is full. The sector is full. Can't take you anymore. I'm sorry.
And that there's no room to take anyone in. So he starts forcing people who are seeking asylum to form these unofficial wait lists.
Mr. Trump added that some aren't legitimately seeking asylum.
They're gang members. They're not afraid of anything. It's a scam. Okay, it's a scam. It's a hoax.
These wait lists then grow so much that the shelters at border towns become overwhelmed, and then the refugee camp tent cities that we see now start to pop up then.
On the banks of the Rio Grande, across the river from Brownsville, Texas, thousands of migrants have been forced to seek refuge in a sprawling tent city while they wait to get into the U.S.
Then in 2019, one of the biggest changes to asylum process in the border gets implemented, which is the Migrant Protection Protocol. It's what we know now as also the Remain in Mexico policy.
The Trump administration is expanding its Remain in Mexico policy by allowing to send most asylum seekers to Mexico, regardless of where they cross the border.
This policy forces people who are asking for asylum to be returned to Mexico and wait there for months or even years for their chance to ask for asylum and go through the immigration court process in the U.S.
that frustration that is building, the desperation that is building, is really reaching this crisis point at the border.
Then in 2020, he sort of just put the nail in the coffin by issuing an order that essentially shut down the border completely to anyone seeking asylum and to anyone who crosses.
Our nation's top healthcare officials are extremely concerned about the grave public health consequences of mass uncontrolled cross-border movement.
Everyone is just being returned on the same day that they cross or not being allowed in. And he's using the pandemic as an excuse at that point to shut down the border, essentially.
Officials will now turn away most migrants entering the country from the southern border. That includes people fleeing violence, even if they come legally and show no signs of being sick.
It's been a little over a month since Biden took office. There's been so much news around immigration policy that's happened since then. I feel like I'm getting alerts all the time on my phone. Let's talk through it. What were some of the big things that Biden did when he first entered office?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's been nonstop since Biden entered the White House, and he immediately started signing executive order after executive order and policy memos all related to immigration to sort of start undoing the really tight knot that was left by Trump.
Yeah, so it's hard to know where to start. You know, there's been so many things. I mean, just right from the start, Jamila, you know, he signs an executive order ending the Muslim ban. Soon there's an order stopping border wall construction that halts immediately. And then you see other things like the creation of a family separation task force that's looking into how to reunite families in cases where parents were deported without their kids. There's a memo that scales back ICE enforcement to a place more similar to where it was at the end of the Obama administration. And some of these orders, as you can tell, are very concrete. So border wall construction has stopped, but others are more of a looking into. Biden, instead of just ordering that something be done, has often said he wants it to be looked into or for a task force to be formed. So for example, with the public charge rule, which is basically a wealth test that's designed to block poor and working class immigrants from coming to the country, in his executive order, he said, you know, task the government, his government, with looking into it. And, you know, a lot of people, especially with an order that's so obviously biased like that one, would have preferred that he just eliminate it.
So I want to talk about executive orders here a little bit. Can you tell me about the difference between an executive order and something that goes through Congress?
So executive orders, and we saw this a lot under previous administrations, also Obama and Trump, but that's something that the person who is sitting in that Oval Office and has the role of the President of the United States, that person can write something, sign it, and make it so, essentially. That can, just like it can be done with the stroke of a pen, it can be undone with the stroke of a pen. So somebody else comes into the White House and they can just write their own new executive orders and rip the old ones and throw them in the garbage. Very different from something more permanent, which is writing legislation, passing it through Congress, and making it more permanent. And as far as immigration goes, we haven't had permanent changes to immigration in a very long time. And of course, there was already criticism of just how many executive orders Biden was signing. And actually, while he was signing one of the latest immigration ones, he sort of turned to the camera. The cameras were rolling in the Oval Office, and he said,
"There's a lot of talk with good reason about the number of executive orders that I've signed. I'm not making new law. I'm eliminating bad policy."
So let's start with one of the most horrifying things that happened during the Trump administration, which was family separation. What's Biden doing about that?
So as Noah said earlier, the Family Separation Task Force is something that Biden has formed via executive order. So right now, he's not doing much of anything. So far, all he said is, let me now assign this group of people to come up with solutions and to find these parents and to reunite these families. But nothing is happening right now. Ideally, the goal of this is to reunite parents and with their children, and that there will be major changes. But the damage is already been done. These kids and these moms and dads have already been torn apart, have spent time apart. Some have been reunited, some have not. But really, the trauma that this Trump era policy cost and this separation, this is something that is probably going to be impossible to reverse in many cases.
What's life like right now for someone who's living in the U.S. as an undocumented immigrant?
Yeah, well, when it comes to specifically on, you know, what has Biden done that has changed life for undocumented immigrants in the U.S., I think the main thing is that ICE has now operating with far scale back deportation priorities. Under Trump, it was basically anyone and everyone was a priority for deportation. If ICE knocked on the door looking for someone with a criminal history, for example, but they found three other undocumented people there, everyone would often get detained and deported. And that's been changed now. The Biden administration has said they're going to take a far more targeted approach in which basically only people who very recently crossed the border or people with what are called aggravated felonies are priorities for deportation. So what that means is that for the vast majority of undocumented immigrants in the United States, they are no longer going to be actively targeted by ICE, although there is a lot of concern about whether ICE is actually going to be following the orders that have been given to them on high. But if those orders are followed, it would mean that the vast majority of undocumented immigrants would be, generally speaking, safe from deportation.
So that sounds like a lot of change all at once. Did people get what they wanted in those changes? And I'm talking specifically here about immigration advocates.
It's been a mix. On the one hand, if you look at the first couple weeks and first month of the Biden presidency, he has certainly done far more than President Obama did in his first month in office. But there are a lot of things that people were hoping that he would go further on. For example, at the border, there is still a CDC order in place that basically says that almost everyone who crosses the border is immediately expelled without even having the right or ability to request asylum or go before an immigration judge. And then on the visa side of things, there are two bans that are still in place that Trump put in last year during the pandemic that basically block most forms of legal immigration to the country. So there are three of Trump's harshest anti-immigrant policies are still on the books, and they may all be lifted soon, but we don't know when that's going to happen. The Biden administration hasn't said, and it's something that advocates are very frustrated about.
Part of what some of the folks that I've talked to in the immigrant rights movement are happy about is that there is a very clear message that the administration is sending from the start that this is a priority. While there may not be happy with how much time things are going to take or what exactly Biden is doing, he's made it a priority. He's made immigration a priority. And not just that, but it's really sort of in the words that are being used. I know one of the executive orders that he signed, I highlighted one of the sentences in there that said, securing our borders does not require us to ignore the humanity of those who seek to cross them. The opposite is true, which is definitely not the kind of language that we've seen in any sort of executive order or DHS memo for many, many years. And then speaking of sort of the messaging and the words and how they matter, Biden has also now directed DHS to stop using the word alien or illegal alien. And that really matters to a lot of people. I spoke with Reina Montoya, who is a DACA recipient. She's in Arizona and she does a lot of work with the immigrant communities. And this is what she said.
All these years of community organizing from directly impacted people, I think are a testament of what we saw in the language and the sophistication of the Biden plan, from having to redefine how they addressed us, right? It is within the law that they call us aliens, and being able to refine that to like non-citizens, it's a huge step that many people would think is like, oh, that's just language, but words matter. And I remember being in high school and having to read that very awful rhetoric. It gets under your skin and it's like, I'm not an alien and I'm a human being.
Okay, that's really powerful, especially given the fact that for so many years, people have been trying to get lawmakers to understand that you just don't call a human being an alien.
Absolutely, Jamila.
So, Fernanda, one of the policies you've been reporting on for the last 2 years is migrant protection protocols. A lot of us might know this as the Remain in Mexico policy. What has Biden done to reverse that policy that's kept roughly 70,000 asylum seekers stuck in Mexico's border cities?
Well, one of the things he did right away is he sent a directive to DHS to no longer enroll anyone else in the program. That was sort of step one. Although I should mention that for a while now, not many people were being added into the MPP program because, like we mentioned earlier, the border is sealed shut because of the CDC order. So it was more of a looking ahead, we're not going to put anybody else in this program. After he says, don't enroll anybody else in MPP, then he says, okay, we have a plan and we're going to start letting people in slowly. And we're going to do it in 3 ports of entry. And it's going to be people who are still enrolled in this program and who are still sort of waiting in Mexico. And this is how it works. If you are a family or an asylum seeker and you have an open case or an active case, meaning you've been waiting patiently at the border for your next court date, you can go on this website that the government set up. You put in your information and then it'll tell you if you qualify that you will show up on this date at this time. You'll be tested for COVID. And then if you're negative for COVID and it's your date and it's your time, then you enter the port of entry. You get processed, and then you're not going to be put in any sort of detention facilities. Likely, they're going to be given ankle monitors or just asked to check in with ICE officers once they arrive at their final destination. So the Biden administration is slowly starting to allow folks who have been stuck in Mexico to not wait in these Mexican border cities and in these refugee camps while their case goes through court, but to get to their destination in the U.S. and ride out their time there.
Fernanda, when is this website going to go live? And have you heard if it's working? Are there glitches? We know that government websites never really work.
Yeah, so this website went live on Friday. Early in the morning, I went to it and I started refreshing it, and it didn't seem to be to go live for a few hours. I started poking around on Twitter and people seemed really frustrated. Once the website finally opened up, it was up for a little while and then it crashed, of course. There was a message that said that there was an unexpected amount of traffic. There's just a lot of confusion at the border. But over the weekend, we saw people start to be let into the United States under this new plan from Biden. There's a family that I met back in February of 2019, and they've been caught in the middle of this Remain in Mexico policy mess. The dad, who I've been mostly in touch with, his name is Juan Carlos Perla, and I met him and his wife and his 3 young boys. They fled El Salvador in search for asylum in the United States back in the fall of 2018. It took them a while to get to the border. Once they did, they had to wait in these wait lists that we talked about earlier. And finally, in February of 2019, they were able to present themselves with agents at the port of entry in San Diego. And after seeking asylum and being detained for a few days, like most of the people on this MPP program, they were sent back to wait in Tijuana until their court date and throughout their entire process of seeking asylum as their case moved through the courts. They ended up at one point in a really, really terrible situation where they lived inside of this abandoned bus. And when I talked to him that time, he said his little boys were covered in bug bites, that there were mice, that the situation was really bad. And he came close to giving up because he really couldn't make it in Mexico. It's still a foreign country to him. He doesn't have legal status in Mexico. But he kept holding on to hope that next time, maybe next time he went to court in the U.S., something would happen and he would be granted asylum with his family.
Pues la verdad los alegramos porque ya en verdad nomás entró, empezó a trabajar, verdad, por los que están allá adentro. Y ahora ya me alegro por lo siguiente porque ya los tomó más en cuenta nosotros. Ya hay una esperanza, ¿verdad? Que.
So I talked to him after President Biden took office, and he told me that he felt really hopeful, that he felt seen again, and he was glad to see that this new president was coming in with a plan or with ideas for what to do with people like him, with asylum seekers and families like his. Ideally, they'll be allowed to come into the United States, make it all the way to Oregon, where they have somebody who's willing to sponsor them, and then wait in Oregon with their sponsor to see what will be the final outcome of their asylum case, which would be a much better and safer situation than continue to be stuck in Tijuana.
El viernes lo único que me dijo de que tuviéramos paciencia porque las líneas estaban muy saturadas y no le entraba a la línea porque estaba muy saturada.
When I talked to him on Monday, he was a little frustrated that he hadn't been able to get through, that his lawyer hasn't been able to get through this website. And I was looking on Twitter, and he's definitely not the only lawyer. There's a lot of people that are posting on Twitter that the website is down.
Yo a ver si entre esta semana posiblemente le abría la página para para meternos y ahí nos iban a decir la cita donde los íbamos a entregar. Eso es lo que nos dijo.
There are issues with the website. There's confusion at the border. But Juan Carlos and his family, they are waiting, hoping that it's only going to be a few days until they can finally get in the system, get their date and time for when to show up at the border, and then finally be allowed to come into the U.S.
What's the takeaway from Biden's first month when it comes to immigration?
So I think it's a mixed picture. On the one hand, you see that Biden is already kind of going further than Obama did in two terms of his presidency. He's immediately scaling back ICE enforcement. And, you know, you heard probably many times Obama referred to as the deporter in chief because particularly during his first term, deportation numbers were at or near record levels. There's really no way that Biden is going to end up going down that path again. He's learned what happens when you kind of give ICE free rein or don't rein it in. And he's not going to do that again. And also you can see in some of the people who've been appointed in his administration who are helping to write these executive orders that there are people who really understand these issues. There are people who've been spent the last 4 years criticizing what Trump has done and are now committed to undoing that. On the flip side, I think we've seen this first month that it's going to take a long time to undo these. The damage that was done under Trump. Part of that is that Biden is taking a cautious approach, more cautious than many people would like on some aspects of undoing the damage from Trump. But the other is that Trump really did just tremendously undermine and gut the nation's immigration system. And it's going to take months and years to build back many of the things that he destroyed. So we're in for a long haul here.
And I think it goes even beyond bringing things back. The system wasn't perfect before Trump. The system was flawed. The immigration system and laws were flawed before Trump. So this is a sort of wait and see what Biden is going to do to make it better, to not just take us back to 2016, but to make it better for a lot of people. And this moment really couldn't come soon enough for a lot of folks. There are a lot of changes, as Noah said. Some are already happening. Some are going to take a while. But there's a lot of people for whom Biden already came too late. There's been trauma, separation, loss of life. We saw last year the highest number of remains of undocumented border crossers recovered in just the Arizona desert. And so all that stuff, that can't be undone.
Fernanda and Noah, stick around. After the break, we'll take a deep look at what's in the big immigration bill that was introduced last week and the likelihood that it will actually pass. Stay tuned. And hey, listeners, we would love to learn a little bit more about you, what kind of news you need, and how best to serve you. So if you go to motherjones.com/survey, answer a couple questions. It's really easy. There's a treat in it for everyone, and you could win a $100 Visa gift card. So again, that's motherjones.com/survey. Thanks. Elsewhere at Mother Jones this week, another immigration story you've got to check out. Imagine eating your favorite foods again for the first time in years. It's one of life's most enduring pleasures, isn't it? The freedom of choosing what you get to eat. Asylum seeker Stephen Tendo has scars from the torture he escaped in Uganda. A hand with two missing fingers, severed by a wire cutter. But when he arrived in the U.S., an immigration judge didn't believe him. And he spent 26 months enduring a different kind of torture in a Texas detention center. 2 weeks ago, he was finally released.
Yes, I am free.
Reporter Isabella Diaz caught up with him right after he got out. Listen to the joy in his voice.
It's not happening, but it's happening. And I'm so grateful. Sometimes I eat different food now, right? Wait a minute, I'm eating chicken right now. This pink chicken. I'm like eating fish. I am eating a mango. Oh, an orange. Oh my God. I'm like, is it happening? Yes, it's happening.
The simple pleasures of eating while free. Stephen Tendo's is the subject of a big piece of reporting about asylum at motherjones.com right now. Go check it out online.
The
Mother Jones stories you're hearing right now are brought to you by our listeners and loyal readers who fuel our work. Audience support makes up 2/3 of the Mother Jones budget and helps our team dig deep on stories that matter. Make a donation at motherjones.com/give to keep our nonprofit newsroom humming. Again, that's motherjones.com/give. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Mother Jones immigration reporters Fernanda Echavarri and Noah Lenard about Biden's big plans on immigration, how to undo the damage that Trump did, and the big immigration bill that's in Congress right now. Let's jump back in. Big news, a new immigration bill was introduced in Congress last week. Were you expecting this?
Yes. Short answer is yes. Biden talked about this bill quite a bit. And then we saw early on in the first days of the new administration, Vice President Kamala Harris talked about what would be in the bill, especially in an interview with an Univision. She got a little bit more detailed into what we could expect from the bill. Then we also saw a fact sheet from the White House, but it really wasn't until last Thursday that the bill was finally introduced in Congress. So we got to see the text in the legislation.
So what's actually in this bill?
It's a pretty comprehensive bill. It addresses people in the United States, people outside of the United States, the root causes of migration in Central American countries. One of the sort of biggest and boldest parts of the bill is the creation of an actual path to citizenship for millions and millions of undocumented people. There's an estimated 11 million people who are here without proper documentation. And based on this proposal, many, many of those 11 million people could qualify. It basically gives folks an opportunity to get a 5-year temporary status, so protected from deportation, but not anything permanent. And then after having that status for 5 years, then they can get a green card, which they would have for 3 years, and then they can apply for U.S. citizenship. So it's not something that would happen overnight. It would take 8 years, but at least there's a door that they can knock on and open and start the process, if this bill passes. And there are restrictions. Obviously, they must pass a criminal background check. There are fees they have to pay. They have to prove they've been here for a certain amount of time. And the most important part of this, and this is why I get really mad when I see people say, oh, this is just going to cost, you know, all these people are going to come across the border and they're all going to get citizenship. This only applies to people who are already living in the United States prior to January 1st of this year. I just want to make that clear, because there's definitely already the narrative on the right. And you turn on Fox News and you already see a lot of misinformation about what's in the bill and what Biden has already done.
Who's bringing this bill to the House and the Senate, and what kind of support are we seeing for it?
Yeah, so you have Bob Menendez, senator from New Jersey, bringing it in the Senate. And then in the House, you have Linda Sanchez of California. Support, I mean, it's very popular among Democrats, but it faces really steep odds to actually passing, because this, unlike other things, is not a bill that would go through the reconciliation process, meaning it would need 60 votes. And at this point, it really seems unlikely that Democrats are going to be able to get 10 Republicans to vote for this bill. And that's why you're already starting to see immigrant advocates and people in Congress start to signal that they're okay with maybe this bill not passing in its entirety, but only pieces of it that are perhaps very popular. So you could see in the end, maybe this bill doesn't pass, but instead what passes is a legislation that provides a path to citizenship for Dreamers, for example, but not all of the 11 million undocumented immigrants in the country.
So that sounds like a big step for people who are undocumented right now and have been in the country since before January 1st of 2021. But what about everybody else?
So this would also, on top of giving that opportunity to people who've been living in the shadows, this would also give immediate green cards, which, you know, we call them green cards. It's a legal permanent resident status to three groups of people: to DACA recipients, a lot of people call them Dreamers, people who were brought here as children who have right now temporary protection. That's about 700,000 people. It would also give immediate green cards to TPS holders. That's temporary protected status, a program in which the U.S. government offers relief to immigrants from certain countries who fled civil war, environmental disaster, or an epidemic to live and work here legally. This is, again, another temporary permit that can be renewed, but this would give about 350,000 people a green card immediately. And also, farm workers who have worked for more than 5 years and can prove that here in the United States who didn't have status before would get immediate green cards. So that's a big deal.
Honestly, I've talked to my aunt, I've talked to other dreamers, to other undocumented youth who didn't apply for DACA.
Here's Reina Montoya again, who we heard from earlier.
They are holding their breath. I feel like that's how people are, to be quite honest with you. They are like, well, I won't celebrate, like these were the words of my aunt, I won't celebrate until it passes. And she has like a DACA recipient who is her daughter. And she's like, we've been just at this for so long, and both Democrats and Republicans used us, that it's like, I'm not sure I can celebrate yet until it actually becomes real. And then yet I feel the reality hits, right? It's like, what's going to get to 60 votes? Are the Democrats actually going to do a reconciliation process if they don't get to 60 votes? And if they do get to a reconciliation process, are we as dreamers going to be used as a political pawn again from both the Democrats and the Republicans?
A lot of people feel just like her right now, seeing that just what an uphill battle this is going to be. There's a bit of a back and forth on how people are feeling excited, but also trying to be realistic about what's ahead.
So I'm hearing a little bit of cautious optimism.
Yeah, so one thing that kind of highlights what it might look like for things to be changing was a conversation that I had while we were reporting this story with someone who had been trying to come to the United States for years, but got blocked by the so-called Muslim ban.
My name is Mohammad Saleh. My nickname is Aydin, and my last name is Vatan.
He's from Iran, and he's a pilot.
That is right. I'm an airline captain.
So he had started the visa process years ago, but just as he was finishing it up, he got blocked by the Muslim ban that the Trump administration put into effect in 2017. His girlfriend was able to come here.
She got the visa, and I got stuck behind the border, behind the wall.
So they ended up getting stuck in a long-distance relationship for years, and his father actually grew very ill with cancer. And because he's really dependent on his oldest son, Aydin, he came back to Iran so that Aydin could help take care of him. So this is what Aydin understandably calls the worst period of his life, his girlfriend in the U.S., his father ill and back home in Iran when they all should have been together in the United States.
It was it broke my family, actually. It broke my family, and it was unbelievably difficult for us.
But when I spoke to Aydin on Monday, he'd actually just gotten his visa the night before by chance.
I'm not into details, but I think from the day that President Biden was elected, everything, even at courts, changed. I don't know if President Biden will listen to this podcast ever, but I would really like to thank him, and I would really want to say thank you, sir, from the bottom of my heart.
But it's also complicated. This isn't a simple story of the Biden administration immediately fixing what the Trump administration had put into place. Actually, Aydin had to sue the government because of this ban that we talked about earlier, the other visa ban that bans most immigrants from coming to the United States. So as long as that's in effect, there's still going to be a lot of people being banned. But Aydin now is not one of them. And in the coming months, I think there will likely be more people in his position.
What does this really mean for people in their daily lives? And right now, some things have changed, some things are better, but there is so much work to be done to actually see change for a lot of people.
Fernanda, Noah, thanks so much for joining the show. Always great to have you on.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for talking with us, Jamila.
Hi, my name is Isabella Diaz, and I'm a fellow in the DC office. I spent a whole year following the case of an asylum seeker from Uganda who was sent to a detention center in Texas. You can read my big feature now on motherjones.com. Here are the credits for today's show. Theme music for the Mother Jones podcast was composed by Micah Barrett at Hear Film. Reporting on this week's show came from Fernanda Echavarri and Noah Leonard. This episode was produced by Fernanda Echavarri and Molly Schwartz, our associate producer. It was mastered by James West, our executive producer, with additional production by Mark Helenowski and Jamila King. And credit where credit is due, Mother Jones is supported by you, our listeners and readers. So thank you.
That's it for this week's show. Stay tuned for more Mother Jones deep dives into big ticket Biden administration issues. We're going to jump right into them. If you want to support the Mother Jones podcast, it's really easy. Just go to wherever you got this episode and hit that subscribe button. It really does help. I'm your host, Jamila King in Brooklyn. I'll see you next week.
This podcast is brought to you by Mother Jones listeners like you who donate to keep our newsroom buzzing. Help us stay on the beat. Go to motherjones.com/give.